This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And welcome, boys and girls. That's right, it is the first Sunday in August, August 6th, 2006. I didn't melt this week. I hope you didn't either. Everybody here, thank you so much for joining us in your air-conditioned car, your air-conditioned home. Actually, it's nice enough to be outside today listening to us as we podcast through the world. We are going to talk about growth and environment and all sorts of fun stuff that's important to everyone. Hopefully you are concerned, because you should be. Our guests today, Cale Jaffe and Morgan Butler from the Southern Environmental Law Center. And you know who we want to thank for those folks coming by today? Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports features outdoor footwear. At Blue Ridge, you can also find synthetic, quick-drying, travel-friendly shorts and tops from Patagonia and the North Face. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Bear Croat Shopping Center here in Charlottesville, the Mountain Inn at Wintergreen, there in Richmond, and at BRMS.com. Let's check with our men to make sure that all the buttons are pushed properly. Gentlemen, how goes it?
It's going well. How are you doing?
Doing great, Rick. Thanks for having us in today.
Ooh, no, thank you for coming. It's finally a beautiful day. It'd be different if it was that nasty 98 and I was offering you the air-conditioned studio, but it's actually pretty nice out there.
Yeah, we were actually listening to the bluegrass this morning at home on the back porch, so it's perfect for outdoor listening right now.
The bluegrass is perfect for a good Sunday worth of outdoor listening. But I do appreciate you giving up your time. Now, both of you are from Southern Environmental Law Center, which a lot of people aren't familiar, is located right here on the downtown mall in Charlottesville, correct?
Yeah, we're right above the downtown grill, not too far from the Mud House. And we're based here. We're a regional organization. We've been around for about 20 years now, with covering a six-state region, Virginia, Tennessee, the Carolinas, Georgia, and Alabama, and covering a range of issues from, obviously, sort of the land and community and transportation issues that we're going to mostly talk about today, but also clean air, clean water, wild places. Our new slogan is Champions for Conservation, which I really like. It's better than Champions for the Tour de France. I'm sticking with it.
Well, the Tour de France champion could use a little support, I believe, these days.
It certainly could.
Whoever the champion might be, because I think that's up in the air as well. Now, each of you have your own specialties at the Southern Environmental Law Center, both of which will play into a lot of today's discussion. Cale, you specialize in air quality, correct?
Right. My primary focus is the clean air work. I've done some of the work helping out with Morgan on the land and community stuff. But the clean air stuff has been exciting for a while. One of the things we've gotten into is a case that's heading actually to the United States Supreme Court this fall. It's a case that we've been working on since 2001, a Clean Air Act enforcement case against Duke Energy Power Company down in North and South Carolina.
Nobody in here likes Duke.
That's right. Not only is it Duke, it's Duke Energy. It's power companies.
Ooh.
And Duke all combined into one nasty soup.
Did you tell me that's going to the Supreme Court?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an enforcement case, under the Clean Air Act that started during the Clinton EPA. They started these enforcement actions when the EPA, when the administration changed hands. We grew concerned as an organization that they might not continue to vigorously enforce the Clean Air Act, and sure enough, so we intervened at the case back at that point. We've been sort of working with EPA all along. And then when it came time to ask the Supreme Court to review the case, the EPA actually opposed our petition for review. So we went up there by ourselves, and amazingly enough, they agreed to want to hear what we had to say. So we're going to go bring the case to their attention this fall.
So for a lot of people, and I always say that we have a fair amount of turnover with students and grad students and the folks associated with the university, as well as just as our community grows ever so much, and as WNRN grows, You know, we're over in Harrisonburg now at 95.1 and down in Lexington at 95.9 and Richmond, et cetera. Southern Environmental Law Center, a lot of people who know it's in Charlottesville just think it represents our community or our state. But you're doing a lot more than that, and that's a prime example.
Yeah, I think it is it's a perfect example. And in this case in particular, obviously it's a regional case because it's North and South Carolina, but it's part of a national effort. We're involved in a very similar case that's just not quite as far along down in Alabama and Georgia. When we filed our first brief with the Supreme Court, we had other people sort of filing friends of the court brief on our side from all over the place, the state attorney generals in New York and California and state of Washington, people from all over the country sort of paying attention to this. So in that particular example, what we're doing is having a national impact.
And as an air quality specialist, it wouldn't matter really whether you just represented the Charlottesville area or a number of regional states because air blows everywhere.
Air pollution knows no boundaries, as they say.
That's right. And Morgan, your specialty, transportation, land use, etc. Got a promotion, right? Or at least tagged with some with some title that requires you to work more with equal pay.
Exactly. This past spring was named the point person of, as Cale mentioned, we have a regional approach in the six states in the southeast, but we decided, with Charlottesville being our headquarters and also just the natural beauty of this area under a big attack lately, that it really made sense to have a Charlottesville, Albemarle County specific project. And so I was named the point person of that project, and we, as we'll be discussing today, are basically going to focus on a lot of the growth and environmental issues that are impacting us here in our very own backyards.
All right. We're going to jump into this topic real quick more of a local growth and how it affects the environment and the retail space, a big article came out back in May. But my dad asked me to ask you gentlemen a question. Morgan, this may apply more towards you. For those of you who listen regularly, you know that I grew up down on the bay. My dad wants to know why the Chesapeake Bay Foundation and some of the regulations that go along with that prevent land use east of I-95 from having their crap go into the bay, but west of 95 not having anything against them from all their use running into rivers that eventually end up in the bay anyway.
Right.
I told him I'd ask that question before we got into the main topic.
You know, I imagine it probably came down to a mixture between the parts east having the most impact, but also probably a bit of a political compromise in that it's probably easier to draw a case for regulating those counties and localities to the east of 95 and harder to get the political backing to do
that. Is there any one person we can blame?
You know, I don't know. I'm not really sure.
All right.
Though there has been a little bit of talk, just on your dad's question there, of expanding westward the number of counties or the specific localities that would have to comply with additional regulations because of pollution into the Chesapeake Bay, sort of expanding that concept of what counts as the Chesapeake Bay watershed.
And so I think it's an excellent point and something that, you know, we need to look into to try to expand those protections, because as you point out, Rick, it's not just the areas to the east that are impacting the bay. It's a huge watershed, and if we're going to have any real impact on it, we need to address it in its entirety.
Well, that all obviously comes from living on the bay. I'm sure that people who live on a farm might have a different, you know, take on it, but nonetheless, I have now met my my duties as a son for the hour. All right, let's get into today's topic, talking a little more locally. The Albemarle Retail Report came out in May. Is that correct?
Yeah, it came out late this spring. I think between the Seville Weekly and even the county itself, there's been much better work on sort of tracking, if you will, the amount of residential units that have been approved in the county. We became concerned with the fact that nobody was really taking a more holistic view of the amount of retail space that's being approved and under consideration in the county. We went to talk to county officials about it and found out that they just didn't have the figures either. So we decided it would be an appropriate role for us as SELC to take a step back and look at the big picture of what's going on in terms of retail space in the county. we compiled this report basically using figures from the county itself. We used county consultants to, we used their figures for how much retail space we can expect Albemarle County and Charlottesville to be able to absorb over the next 10 to 20 years.
And what do you mean absorb?
Absorb meaning as you build out more retail space, you get to a point where ultimately you're going to have more than you can expect that's going to be profitable, you know, based on current population and growth rates. At some point, you've approved and built so much retail that it's either going to start taking business from other already existing retail every time you build one of these new centers. And so that's essentially what we mean by absorption rates.
All right. Now, one of the things that you found was, and this number kind of blew me away, but I'd like to put it in perspective, that the county had either already approved, and I guess this implies that the city as well, Charlottesville and Albemarle, and you're not counting Nelson or Greene or anything else, right? Because Greene County has a big-ass project going on just north of Albemarle County.
Just across the border.
So Albemarle and Charlottesville.
Actually, it doesn't. This report just looked at Albemarle County. It did not include Charlottesville.
They had already approved or were reviewing plans for 3.3 million square feet in retail space.
Of new retail space on top of the about 5 million square feet that we already have.
So 70% in new space. And what sort of time period are we talking about?
This would be probably in the next, I mean, starting as soon as tomorrow, but it would build out over the next 10 to 20 years.
All right. Now, I'm sure that a lot of people who own a home can know what 2,000 square feet is like. But let's assume that everybody's been to the Harris Teeter and Barracks Road or the new Target or something like that. What kind of square footage is that?
I think the figure we're using, we were able to get the square footage for the Lowe's on 29. And that,
well, that's a big building.
And that's somewhere between, I think, about 1.4 to 1.6 million square feet. I don't have the figures in front of me.
Does that include the parking lot?
No, that's just the building itself.
But I think generally when you talk about a big box store like a Harris Teeter or something like that, you're thinking in the neighborhood of that, you know, could be 85,000 square feet to 100,000 square feet, somewhere in that range is your usual big box retail outlet.
But Rick, I feel like for these figures that we're throwing out, the 3.3 to 3.5 million square feet of new retail that's either been approved or is currently being considered by the county, to put it in context, you really have to compare that to what we were calling the absorption figures before. And again, we used county figures for this based on what the county's consultants have put together for the Places 29 study, as well as the county's fiscal analyst. And remember that with the 3.3 to 3.5 million square feet number in the background of what's already either been approved or is coming down the pipe, these county figures show that with it, by the year 2015, we can expect to be able to absorb in Albemarle County an additional 1 million to 1.4 million square feet. So that's when the 3.3 to 3.5 really becomes daunting.
More than twice and maybe three times as much as we can absorb.
Right, about 2.5 to 3.5 times what we can absorb based on the county's own estimates.
I mean, essentially what we did with this report, I got to work with Morgan on this one, my excuse for being here this morning. And we said, let's take the county's own estimates on what we can absorb, and let's take the county's own data on what they're looking at approving, and let's just put those two figures on the same piece of paper and see what it looks like. And lo and behold, you put on the same piece of paper and you realize there's a serious disconnect going on here. And that all, I mean, just to put it sort of in a framework, really relates to this concept of, you know, what people commonly call smart growth. It's if you build faster or you approve faster than you can reasonably absorb, what you're really looking at is it affects how you grow, not just that you're growing so quickly. But if you slow things down, if you say, let's redevelop some of our more interior shopping malls that could use a freshening, you slow down that pace, you can create walkable communities, less reliance on automobiles. Not only is that going to dramatically impact sort of quality of life, make it easier for us to get around, not sitting in traffic all day long, it also has dramatic impacts on air quality and water quality and chewing up open space, things like that.
All right, we are talking about retail growth, the environment, et cetera, here with Cale Jaffe and Morgan Butler from the Southern Environmental Law Center here on today's Wake Up Call, 11:15. But isn't it, let me ask guys, you know, you're talking about redoing some of the older spots that are already there. That's more expensive, right? Isn't it actually cheaper to build a new place?
Well, it really depends how you...
And I'm talking about money, because mm-hmm. that's what the contractors are looking at. That's what the guy who owns the place is looking at. He's not concerned about the long-term look on, you know, on the expense of the land and the trees and the water.
Right.
I'm talking about if I own the place with the trees that I can build a new shopping center, or the place with the shopping center already there that I need to knock buildings down or redo, etc. Isn't it cheaper out of my pocket to start from scratch, knock down the trees, regrade it, and put in a whole new set?
Two sort of responses to that occur to me. First is not necessarily. It's just that really what it is consistency and accountability in the sense of knowing how to make your numbers work out. Developers say, look, I've done the greenfields development. I know that if I buy this and I grade it and I build this many thousands of square feet, I know I can make money. If I go do this other project where I'm redeveloping something in town that's this old, you know, the Roses Shopping Center for something over there at the base of Pantops or Almar Square, I redevelop those. I've never done that before, and I have no idea if that's going to make me money. So I don't want to do that. I want to do what I know works. Because I'm putting all this money into this project. I want to make sure I don't lose my shirt. So the response to that is, I hear what you're saying, and absolutely, if we just had no Board of Supervisors, no planning process, that's exactly what would happen. People would just sort of sprawl ever outward into the rural areas. The whole point of electing a Board of Supervisors and having these people who are representing the community as a whole and not just the developers is that they take into account things that are beyond the developer's pocketbook.
You know, we're talking about 3.3 million square feet.
There's going to be a cheesecake factory, too,
yeah.
I hear.
Oh, see, and that's the thing is, man, you get all these really cool places coming, and sometimes it's just not so bad. like the cheesecake factory. I'm curious, we're talking about, for people who, the big headlines, there's the North Point that just got approved this week. There's the, and that's, for those who don't know, that's just north of the 29 Airport Road intersection.
Right.
There's Albemarle Place, which is the 7-Eleven corner at 29 and Hydraulic Road. Where else are we talking about?
Well, I think 29 is right now the place where we really need to be focusing our attention. And unfortunately, as you point out, with North Point being approved this week, it's further exacerbating the problem. On 29 North alone... you know, we were talking about the 3.3 to 3.5 million square feet. The county has already approved, and this is not approved in the pipeline, but they have already affirmatively rezoned over, at the time the retail report came out, the figure was 1 million square feet just on the 29 North corridor. And again, keep that in the back of your mind, the fact that we're saying we can absorb within the next 10 years 1 million to 1.4 million square feet. But then you add North Point on top of that, as we mentioned, which was rezoned. The rezoning request was approved Wednesday night, which is another 500,000, 600,000 square feet. On the North 29 corridor alone now, we have approved more retail space than we are projected to be able to absorb by the year 2015. And, I mean, just look, North 29, look at the traffic we already have on North 29. There are, in the... That stretch of 29 in the immediate vicinity of the North Point area, there are projected right now to be about 37,000 vehicle trips a day. From the North Point developers' own traffic study, they're saying we're going to be putting 30,000 additional vehicles trips per day on top of that 37,000. It's an increase of almost 80% on a stretch of North 29 that is already failing in most respects.
You're exaggerating. I'm there every day. I only see an accident every day.
Yep.
That's really not that bad, is it?
it's not just the accident.
Yeah, exactly. Depends on which car you're in.
It's the amount of time we're sitting in our cars, idling at traffic lights, idling in traffic, fraying our nerves.
Well, let me ask you. You know, we talk about building these things on 29, and I don't know all the details about the... What's that that plan called the 29 business plan?
Oh, the Places 29.
Places 29. So a lot of 29 was already defined as the growth corridor, correct?
Right.
So how much of this land is actually being rezoned? Because to me, that's a big part of it. You don't... Everybody can go along and say we made a mistake, or 10 years later you say we need to look at something over again, but you zone something for one sort of business or one sort of use.
Right.
And then a year later somebody goes, well, we want to do this with it instead. And you go, fine, okay. You know, obviously they just don't do it immediately, but they spend a lot of effort into it. How much of this excessive retail space, do you know, has come from being rezoned as opposed to putting it in places where it was already determined to be there?
I can just start on that one. It's definitely complex because you've got, you know, the county, and this was certainly moving in the right direction, designated these designated growth areas where let's try to focus our development in these areas. And that... I mean, the boundaries that they've drawn are pretty broad. In fact, it extends all the way up to the North Fork of the Rivanna River, which is where the North Point development goes up to. But just because you say something is in the growth area doesn't mean you can do, it's carte blanche, do whatever you want, build a nuclear waste depository in the middle of the growth area just because it's in the growth area and we'll approve it. You still want to do intelligent, thoughtful development that doesn't encourage sprawl outside of that growth area. So if you do denser, more controlled development inside those boundaries, you're less likely to sprawl new housing and new shopping centers out into the rural areas or out into Greene County or wherever.
But I think your point is also interesting, Rick. At the North Point hearing this past Wednesday night, one of the county's officials who, and I want to make clear everyone realizes, the county actually recommended against approval of the North Point project.
You mean the not the Board of Supervisors, but the people
staff.
Suggest things to the supervisors.
The people that really dig into these issues and take a look at them had recommended that this approval be delayed, that it be denied, but one of their main justifications was that the Places 29 master plan process that we're talking about is scheduled to come out with a regional traffic study this fall that would look at that stretch of 29 and basically determine whether or not that stretch of 29 is going to be able to handle the increased traffic that... our growth patterns are sort of pushing us toward. And even still, four members of the board decided, well, let's not wait until that study comes out. Let's just go ahead and get this thing moving.
Who is that? We throw out names here.
Who the four were. Well, the two that voted against it, so give them the positive credit first, were Sally Thomas and Dennis Rooker.
Okay.
The four against it were... The four that voted against our recommendation, against their own staff's recommendation,
right,
were David Slutsky, Ken Boyd, David Wyant, and Lindsay Dorier.
All right. 11:23 here on the wake-up call. Before we get back to this with Gail Jaffe, Morgan Butler from the Southern Environmental Law Center, let me take a moment and thank the markets of Tiger Fuel for their forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly cloudy today, highs 85 to 90. Partly cloudy tonight, lows 65 to 70. Then partly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms tomorrow, highs 85 to 90. Right now, it's clear across the listening area, 78 in the valley, 78 in Lynchburg, 83 in Richmond, 78 here in the studio in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And today's programming on WNRN, also brought to you by Five Guys Burgers and Fries, Seville Reader's Choice for Burgers. And rated by Zagat Restaurant Survey for 4 years running, Five Guys serves America's standard fresh and handmade from 11 to 9 and open until 10 on Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Berwick Road Shopping Center. They're in the Hollymead Town Center, now on the Downtown Mall in Charlottesville as well. And on the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's FIVE guys.com. And the phone's ringing before I've even gone out the number. So that's why we want to thank listeners like Roy Huta, Wendy Figgett, and Dewey Keaton for contributing during the spring fund drive here at WNRN. It's because of people like them you have the wake-up call here on Sundays. It's also because of our program underwriters like the ones you're hearing from this hour, as well as Orbit and State Farm. So stay tuned and tell a friend about WNRN and be sure to support us during the upcoming fall fund drive. 979-0919-1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And the phone lines are ringing away. We'll take our first caller. We got Dewey from Louisa. Hey, Dewey, didn't I just toss your name out?
Yes, you did.
Hey, thanks for the support. Question, comment, what you got?
Yes, thank you for your good work, folks. Out here in Louisa, we've been effectively shut out the public to our comp plan, which comes up every 5 years, I guess, with every county government in the state. We were shut out for the reason one of the board members said, because of special interests. Now, we've always wanted to maintain rural integrity in our area, and it just seems the developers are just starting to taken over. Their zoning has changed. There's a big shakeup with that in the surrounding counties. In other words, the sprawl is just, we know it's going to happen. A lot of the board members are builders. And I sure would like to get something started to where we could get concerned folks involved more in this and bring up the problems that we have. I'm sure they're out there.
Let these guys take a comment on that. Thanks, Dewey.
Thank you.
That's it's a great point. I mean, two things there that's what I want to respond to. One is the important concept that it's not just Charlottesville's making its own decisions, Elmore's making its own decisions. Obviously, the region really has, we have to think in a bigger picture, and that's part of what we were beginning to scratch the surface of with this retail report, is we need to step back from just every individual little development project and look at it from a much bigger perspective. We've got to think of how do we want to grow as a region, not just what does this developer want to do in this particular piece of property that he's happened to acquire.
The macro vision.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Think big. Think macro. And the second point is, it can get, certainly after watching, you know, North Point go through, it can certainly get a little frustrating to see the Board of Supervisors, whether it's in Louisa or here, approve projects that we're not fans of. But I think it's important to realize, and maybe Dewey is getting to this, that it's like trying to turn a huge ocean freighter around. For so many years, development has gone with a certain way where you're just, you know, the developer comes in with a proposal, goes to the board. There's really very limited opportunities for the public to get involved in that process, and they just sort of rubber stamp it and on it goes. And, you know, Southern Environmental Law Center is trying to get involved in that and raise some of these issues, and there are other groups and other people that are getting involved. And I think we're having progress. I mean, we're beginning to turn that huge ocean freighter around, but the problem is it takes a long time to turn those kind of things pointing the other direction. So we've made some progress. We still lost, obviously, on the North Point vote, but it's beginning to turn around, and hopefully all I can say to folks like Dewey is, you know, you absolutely keep hammering away at your Board of Supervisors and get your neighbors out there as well to hammer away.
I'd like to add to that, Dewey, thanks for calling in and for making the great point. I can't speak to Louisa, but I know in Albemarle County, one of the biggest frustrations that we face in trying to get interested, because there, no doubt, there are just tons and tons of people out there in the county that are very interested in these issues and very concerned about the growth in the county and how it's being patterned. And the way the process works for a lot of these rezonings is that North Point is a stark example of this. North Point was basically under consideration for about 5 years, and the developer came in with a very sort of lowball proposal at first. The board said they wanted him to come this far, and it was just this constant process of negotiating. And during that process, quite frankly, members of the public can only spend so much time on this. They don't have a vested economic interest like the developers do, that, you know, it's an incentive for them to show up at meeting after meeting. Gradually, as these things just wear on, you have attrition with the public, and it's just very hard to stay tuned in and stay on top of it and maintain any sense of hope. But you know, at the end of the day, one nice thing, SELC, we're involved in this for the long run, and we'll just, as Cale said, you've just got to really stay in it and make sure that you're letting your Board of Supervisors and Louisa and the Albemarle residents listening out there, we got to continue to let the Board of Supervisors know that we are paying attention and that we are concerned.
And just sort of to hop on that, what Morgan was saying right there, part of the reason there is this attrition is the process is a little fundamentally flawed in that a developer comes with a proposal. It's not going to be a good proposal, what the county wants. Instead of just denying it outright at that point, saying this proposal is not what we want, the developer will say, well, I can change it. I can work with you. And they say, okay, we won't vote tonight. We'll delay that vote and give you time to come back. And so the developer comes back and maybe he's worked on a little bit, but it really hasn't moved that much. And they say, we still don't like it. And they say, okay, I can keep, don't vote against it tonight. Let me, you know, come back another time. So they keep pushing it off. So if a developer is going to lose a proposal, he's able to delay and not have any vote at all and keeps doing that for as long as it takes until he gets enough votes to have a win.
What would happen if it was denied? Couldn't he, you know, is it like going to court and being found, you know, not guilty or guilty and it's, you know, one shot only? Or if he's denied, he can't, if they take a vote and say no, he can't come back in 6 months and try again?
If it's denied, that's exactly what happened. The Albemarle County ordinances require that they wait a certain period of time. In some instances, I believe it's 6 months, and in some instances, it's as long as a year, but they have to wait that amount of time before they can bring it back. So it's much easier for them, as Cale was saying, to come in the day before the hearing, get sort of take the temperature of what the board is thinking, and if there's any doubt in their minds that they're going to get the votes they need, they just all of a sudden introduce a new proffer, and the board hasn't had time, and county staff hasn't had time to look at it, so it automatically gets deferred.
11:32 here on the Wake Up Call, as we talk with Cale Jaffe and Morgan Butler from Southern Environmental Law Center about growth, retail, etc. here in our area. And as Dewey called up, it's not just a Charlottesville Albemarle issue. Feel free to dial us up 979-0919 877-WNRN Rocks. That's toll free if you're in one of the other areas. I see where Gene called from Charlottesville, but needed to hang up and move on. Feel free to dial us back, Gene. I do want to take a moment and thank 815 Incorporated for their support. 815 specializes in medical supplies and equipment, as well as janitorial supplies and services. When it's time to clean, it's 815. 434-245-8150 and at 815inc.com. That's a new one. I'm not familiar with them. We'll have to check out 815inc.com. But you never know when you might need medical or janitorial supplies. I see the phone's ringing. And we'll take a call from Nathan here in Charlottesville. Hey, Nathan.
Hi, how y'all doing?
Good, man. What you got?
Hey, just curious about the differences between local business and especially small local business and how that impacts the debate about land use as opposed to these huge big boxes. Does it make sense for all of us to shop more local, shop small?
Hey, you know, that's a great question. I'm going to jump on this because Morgan and Cale mentioned how this new retail sort of when you overpopulate, I guess, or you have too much retail space, how it affects the other businesses. And some of the new places, and specifically the Hollymead Town Center, only allowed chain businesses to come in and take over. They did not allow the mom-and-pop store. So, guys, jump on this. Hey, Nathan, thanks for the question, man.
Sure, thanks.
Yeah, it's a great point because there really are differences in you know, different types of retail. The developers will tell you, the ones that are building the new the Hollymead or the new North Point or the new whatever else it is, that we need these big, we need Target, we need Burlington Coat Factory or whatever else is coming down the road.
I'll need a bigger coat after the Cheesecake Factory.
That's right. Yeah, the Cheesecake Factory, the Burlington Coat Factory. It's a factory-specific new outlet that they're building out there, I guess. But that they need these big nationally known chains because that's what's going to draw people, not just from the local area, but that's what, you know, people in Madison or Green or wherever are going to say, I'm going to drive and check out the new Target. So they drive, and that's what those developers really need to get the customers in, that big national presence. But absolutely, it squeezes out the local folks, and you see it all the time. You know, there's... I can't really remember the name of it now. It's so depressing. There was a nice little bakery I used to go to that went out of business as soon as Panera went in to the Barracks Road Shopping Center.
The one in the north wing of Barracks Road. Yeah.
It had really good cinnamon buns, but that's a digression.
I think it's also important to point out that the big boxes, if you will, that do seem to be the current fashion for approvals in the county. Just in terms of their environmental impacts, they're so much more damaging than the smaller sort of mom and pop local stores. You've got, they all come with these huge parking lots that exacerbate runoff, water runoff into our rivers and streams.
Is that because the county says if you're going to have this much square footage, you need this many parking spaces, or is that because, and we'll pick on them, Target headquarters in Minnesota say if we have this much square footage, we demand this many parking spaces?
I don't know of any county requirement. There might be one, I just don't know about it, on the number of parking spaces, but it's definitely driven by the developer or by Target that they'll want this many parking spaces. And what we have said before is, you know, we're not against Target intrinsically. We're not against Walmart. What we are against is, as Morgan points out, the type of development. So, you know, if Target wanted to come in and build a two-story store...
Or take over that Roses that you already mentioned.
Right, or take over that spot and build a structured, you know, parking lot on the back of it so that you don't have an acre of asphalt in front of you, but you've got sort of parking tucked away behind and it's more pedestrian-friendly way to walk around, I'd be all for it. You know, I'd go to that kind of store. But it's the type of development and it's how they're doing it and where they're putting it that's so destructive.
Let me ask you guys real quick. Would you be more in approval of, and it's so easy to say North Point because that happened this week, would you be more in approval of North Point if it was all residential and no business? Would you be more for North Point if it was only local mom-and-pop businesses rather than some of these corporate big-box things coming in here?
I'll take that one. And I think with North Point, while retail was a huge problem, it wasn't the only problem. Another problem was how close they're building the residential units up on the northern part of the property to the North Fork of the Ravanna River. But to answer your question more specifically, I personally would think that North Point would have been hugely improved if you wouldn't even have to eliminate all the retail space there or make it just mom and pop. But if you, as Cale mentioned, just decrease the size of it, make the parking lot have not just be one giant ocean of asphalt, but rather have it be structured, meaning that there are multi-stories to it. Have the stores themselves be multiple stories. Just more personally, yes, I would rather shop at sort of local mom and pop stores than these giant big boxes.
I don't expect you guys to say but so much as representatives of Southern Environmental Law Center, but what would does the SELC have a take on it? If you've mentioned North Point being near the river, what about the Albemarle Place at 29 and Hydraulic? I'm sure that just living in this area that there's always some environmental aspect to it, but if you put it there where there's not such a large feeding river right behind it, and that was all residential, or that was all mom-and-pop stores, would there be a difference in the impact there and the pro or con position that SELC were to take for that?
That's a good question. And first I just want to say it's not necessarily – I mean, I like to do my, you know, whether it's Christmas or birthday shopping, go out and hit the downtown mall and hit those local stores first. One is just a more pleasant shopping experience, but it's not necessarily a mom and pop versus the national chains. If the national chains were to develop in a more environmentally sensitive and in a way that sort of builds better communities as opposed to destroying communities, you know, I'd be all for it. As Albemarle Place is tricky. Yes, it's not on the river, but it's it's a huge amount of new traffic that would be put right at a, already a really stressed intersection where you get on the bypass right there. And already, as you know, as you come down to wait on that to get on the to head west on the bypass west/south, you've got a pretty long wait all the way past Damon's and the Holiday Inn there.
Right, you have to wait for the bus to hit the bus stop so you can drive down the middle and whip over into the right.
Exactly, that's the key feature, is wait for that time that just right, slot it in. That's why they invented turbochargers, just so you can make that move.
All right, 1140 here on the Wake Up Call with Morgan Butler, Cale Jaffe from the Southern Environmental Law Center. Feel free to dial us up. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, in this week's Hook, it's the annual manual, your free ticket to Charlottesville and all of Central Virginia. Schools, sports, culture, and ways to get involved are all included in your yearly reference guide and an ad for almost every business in town. The Hook, special orders don't upset us. And let's take a moment and thank 45fix.com for their support. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. All right, guys, we got a call, and we're going to take that, but when we come back, don't let me forget, I want to talk about the some of the water issues that go along with this. And our call is from Gary out in Albemarle County. Hey, Gary.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, what you got?
I wanted to ask a question regarding air quality, since one of your guests there, that's his specialty. Before I ask that question, though, would the two guests tell us how they got to WNRN studios this morning?
I suppose you mean by walking, biking, or driving.
Yeah, and whether, and if they drove, did they drive in two separate cars, or did they walk, or did they take public transit? I just look curious to know how they got there.
That's a good question. I actually teleported, which was a pretty exciting opportunity to get to use that new technology. Morgan, in his defense, I've never seen him in his car until today for the first time. I mean, he walks everywhere. He lives right off the downtown mall, right above... right near South Street Brewery, which is a dangerous place to live close to.
Gary, we did. That's a great question, and we did drive separately. But in our defense, I can say that I was actually visiting family in Northern Virginia and drove back early this morning and just didn't even think about trying to coordinate.
Okay, thanks. My air quality question is, I originally lived out in the Midwest in Iowa and moved here 20 years ago, and I know that a lot of our haze and our problems with our air quality comes from the westward winds, coming east and bringing all the particulates and all that kind of stuff out of the Midwest smokestacks. What is the Southern Environmental Law Center doing to improve air quality locally? What can be done to improve air quality regionally or nationally? And what can, one person or a group of people do to affect that issue? And I'll just hang up and listen.
That's it's a great question, because as is it Gary, was that the caller's name?
Yes.
Yeah, Gary points out that the a lot of our air pollution, not all of it, but a lot certainly in Shenandoah National Park, is from coal-fired power plants in Ohio and in Tennessee that are blowing this way. A lot of it is also from our own pollution here in state. So there are a couple of complicated things that we can do. One is this this case that the Southern Environmental Law Center has taken to the United States Supreme Court. This is a nationally significant enforcement action. It's specifically targeting cleaning up 8 coal-fired power plants in North Carolina and South Carolina, but it will affect power plants all over the country, assuming that we win the case. The other thing that you can do is more locally, sort of as an individual citizen, is recognize who sort of the power players are and get involved in those decisions. We are looking in Virginia at being targeted by the coal and power industry as the next Ohio. Ohio and Tennessee are littered with power plants. They want to bring that same kind of heavy construction of new power plants to Virginia, and Pennsylvania has also been targeted. the theory being that we don't have as stringent as environmental controls, as certainly as the Northeast states do, but they can build here and they can tap into the power grid and send that power up to the northern states that do have tougher environmental controls. So getting involved in, specifically, Dominion Virginia Power is talking about building a new power plant in Wise County, Virginia. That's going to be a coal-fired power plant. It's going to contribute to a lot of the same problems that we're fighting. So getting involved in the early stages to make sure your elected officials know you don't want that power plant there, or if we are going to build new power, that we do it in environmentally responsible ways.
All right, dial us up with your question, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. And Gary, in case you're curious, I swam down to the studio. It helps to live on the backside of the reservoir. Just jump out. All right, I wanted to talk about the water issues because, and we sort of touched on it earlier, which is, how do you, contractors who are concerned about money, et cetera, doing it this way or that way, and not necessarily look at it in the larger macro vision. I think, Kaylee, did you use the word holistic at one point? But the air issue, I think people, when they were driving by the Hollymead Town Center, well, they certainly paid attention to the land because suddenly it looked like Mars over there. All right, people are making me wait. Because we're going to take Caroline's phone call. Hey, Caroline.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
Good. I have a question getting back to the issue of air pollution, which is I understand the New England states got together, and I think they either implemented or they've made recommendations for some sort of system of pollution trading credits for the key air pollutants. And I didn't know if SCLC was doing anything to foster that sort of thing in Virginia and the southern states, which could also help address some of the issues with pollutants coming from the Midwest. And I'll hang up and listen.
All right, Kale, fire away.
Yeah, there's Caroline's absolutely right. They've done a lot of great stuff in the northeastern states to, one, to try to comply with some greenhouse gas requirements, sort of implementing Kyoto at the state and local level. Southern Environmental Law Center, here what we've done is gotten involved in the states that are implementing their regulations to comply with the Clean Air Act. One of the big issues for coal-fired power plants is what's called new source review, which is basically just a part of the Clean Air Act that requires power plants to either install modern pollution controls when they're newly built or requires them to install those controls when they're modified. The Clean Air EPA sort of sets these rules nationally, and then states get to tinker and do their individual programs to sort of meet that program. We've gotten involved in all of our program states to try to encourage those states to develop really strong new source review regulations. And in fact, Virginia now has got the strongest NSR rules in the Southeast, which is great, and hopefully it'll help stem the tide of those new power plants that are coming here. We got some really good rules passed, actually just recently, just a few weeks ago, went to the final Air Pollution Control Board hearing where they gave their final stamp of approval to the new rules.
Kale, you need to come back on, and we'll do a show just on the air issue.
That'd be fun.
Let me ask you guys real quick. Did the Hollymead Town Center, did the grading and some of the other stuff, the parking lot, is that what caused the Route 29 sinkhole collapse twice?
I don't know if that's what caused it, but there were some disastrous photos from that. And even without that sinkhole collapse, there were some pictures right after some of those heavy rains that same summer. They'll just sort of blow your mind of just the Ravanna River looking just bright red from all the dirt that's flowing into it from Hollymead. And actually, on your sort of question, Rick, think about it. We went to a public hearing where we presented this retail report, and one of the opponents got up and said, why is the Southern Environmental Law Center getting involved in retail growth? You guys are supposed to stick to the environment, not talk about retail and economic development. And my response to that is, the reason we get involved is because, as we're pointing out here, how we grow, how we think about how our economy develops directly affects our air and our water and our land use issues. Poor development creates water quality problems. There's a big question with North Point that still needs to be resolved, which is you're going to put all these houses in hundreds of thousands of square feet there. It's going to require a lot. It's going to create a lot of sewage and waste. Where are you going to truck all that, or where are you going to pump all that? The sewage stations already are overburdened. Anyone who's been down to Well, in Mills Nose, you can sort of begin to already smell it because it's just it's more than the system can handle. So that's a situation that we still need to resolve as far as North Point goes, how we're going to handle that.
All right, let's take a call from Fred. Hey, Fred.
Hey, Rick. How are you doing?
Well, we're great. Questions today? Comments?
Great. First of all, I would like to thank the SCLC for all the good work they're doing that the individual people in Albemarle and Charlottesville can't seem to get together to do, so I applaud them and all of their efforts. And, you know, I'm wondering if the Board of Supervisors know what the word claustrophobic means, and that's the way I'm feeling these days with all the development going on. The developers don't care anything about us. They came here to make money, and when they finish destroying our area, they're going to go somewhere else to where there's a low population or whatever and continue to do the same thing. The Board of Supervisors, I think, should be investigated for conflicts of interest. I really think that that should be pursued.
Yeah, we'll have
and
a show
a
with them on and check it out.
Generation Charlottesville Albemarlean, and not that I've been around for all the seventh generations, but for the time I've been here, I've seen just total disregard for what the majority of the population feels that needs to be done here. I personally don't shop at Walmart, Sam's Club, Target. I wish they'd never come here. I do my shopping on the downtown mall, Barracks Road in the corner. If I can't find it there, I really don't need it. So, at any rate, the SCLC is my hero.
Thanks, Fred.
Thank
and
you.
Your check is in the mail.
Fred, I just, in defense, as Caleb mentioned before, there are members of the Board of Supervisors that really are paying attention to these issues. Dennis Rooker and Sally Thomas especially are just incredible the way they're just thinking of the long-term impacts of a lot of these.
They've also been on the show more than anybody else.
Is
any of the other members.
But as Cale mentioned, I think we are starting to see some progress. A lot of the issues that have importance for the environmental community are starting to come up. They're starting to be mentioned a lot more often during board meetings, and we're hoping that we can continue to sort of shift the tides a bit.
Yeah, and you know, sort of on those, on that shifting of the tide, one of the things we've, you know, the same night that the North Point vote went through, the board said, well, wait a minute, maybe we should slow things down out in Crozet. Maybe we're doing that faster than we initially thought was a good idea. Not to say that the Crozet fight has been won by any stretch of the imagination, but at least they're giving us some indication that they're beginning to clue in. They're beginning to see that all of this development is not necessarily a good thing.
Also, to the board's credit, they're currently right now considering a couple of measures for protecting the rural areas. There's a proposed mountain overlay district ordinance, as well as a fairly controversial way of subdividing in the rural areas known as phasing and clustering. And as I said, to the board's credit, they have put these ideas on the table, these concepts. They're allowing them to be discussed now. And anytime you try to initiate a new ordinance that's going to impact uses of land, it's going to be very controversial. And while none of these measures are perfect in their current and the current way they're proposed, I think it would be a shame if just the outcry from a minority of the county is going to completely cut off any further consideration of them. They may lead to better ideas. There's certainly purpose to keeping them out there and being discussed. And the board is trying to do that now, and I would encourage folks out there to contact the board to let them know they are in favor of rural protection and to keep these issues being discussed.
That's actually a great point just to jump on Morgan there, is to contact the members of the Board of Supervisors or the Charlottesville City Council if you live in town. Those folks they pay attention to their constituents to a really impressive degree. I've talked to some board members who say, you know, they'll sit down and count how many emails they get on a controversial issue for one side or the other. Not to say that that's going to be how they decide the issue, but they want to know what their constituents are saying, so they'll keep that tally. And I know just from having emailed him myself, Dennis Rooker, if you email him about an issue as a citizen, he will send you a very lengthy and fairly thoughtful email back, sort of explaining his thoughts on the issue as a whole. So they pay attention to what the citizens tell them, but the citizens really have to make sure that they make that effort to make the contact.
All right, just a few moments left here with Morgan Butler and Cale Jaffe from Southern Environmental Law Center. You are listening to WNRN Charlottesville, 919-881 Lynchburg, Amherst. And hang tight because Mike Reiser is doing the supportive role at noon today for Les Temps Perdue. He'll play the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Aldo Nova, no Kinks, no Michael Jackson. But you will hear Hoodoo Gurus, Sublime, and Frankie Goes to Hollywood. And he takes requests as well. Les Temps Perdue brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. I thought there was a phone call, and they're still online. So let me say this. Guys, I'm curious about the neighborhood model. My idea of the neighborhood model, and I think the average resident's idea, was that, hey, if you put businesses and residents and offices together, you have a neighborhood model. And isn't that what the eventual plan is for Hollymead Town Center and for North Point, and why is that a problem? Caller, well, you're going to have to hang tight.
If you look at North Point and look at Hollymead, these are massive projects that focus. The primary focus of these projects is retail. They North Point made some small strides toward better adherence to the neighborhood model throughout the five-year process, and thanks to input from David Slutsky of the Board of Supervisors in particular, but it still has a long, long way to go before it really represents what I think most people envision as a neighborhood model, and that's a small, reasonably sized retail office component that's really surrounded by residential, not huge shopping centers with some houses thrown off to the side. I mean, that's really not what I think the neighborhood model is all about.
I think the key to the neighborhood model is you got to commit to it. If you do it half-hearted, people are still just going to get in their cars and drive everywhere. But if you look at the downtown mall, it's a wholesale commitment to building a real neighborhood that's happened organically and with some serious positive input from the city council. And that's how you do it. But if you sort of have this half-hearted, you say, we're going to build this huge shopping mall, but on the Starbucks we'll promise to put some tables and chairs outside so it feels like it's a neighborhood. That's not the kind of commitment to building a real neighborhood.
And we should also remind people that not everybody was for the downtown mall when it started. We got Bud from Whitehall. Hey, Bud.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, man. You're our last caller today. What are you bringing to the table?
Well, I'm listening to what y'all are saying, and I agree with the SELC's efforts, and I commend them on it. I currently am involved and kind of concerned with these talks that are going on the mountain overlay, the phasing, and the clustering. And, some of the comments the guys made about the extreme runoff and siltation of the rivers and, with the concentrated buildings, whether it's commercial or residential. And I'm wondering, my question is, the mountain overlay is going to hit me where I live. I live in the mountains, and I value the mountains, and I value the rural character. And, I'm wondering if their efforts shouldn't be concentrated on the highest impacted areas, i.e., what are the developers doing? It's money-driven, like was saying. It's a tidal wave, like was stated by the gentleman from Louisa. It's coming, but it's got to be controlled. And I'll be the first one to stand up and say, I don't want to see Yamal County destroyed. I value it. I was raised in Fairfax County. I've seen it happen.
All right, let me give these guys a chance to make some sort of reply, because I'm out of time.
Okay, all right, I appreciate you letting me get my call in.
Thanks, Bud.
And thank you all for all your efforts.
Bud, that's an excellent point. Quite obviously, many of the impacts to the environment are coming from the real densely concentrated areas of development. But I think part of the hope, part of the strategy is that when you have all of the buildings sort of clustered together, it is easier to that point make a sort of water management system that can address the runoff from those different sites. And as far as the rural areas are concerned, I know that many of the environmental concerns up there are based on the fact that a lot of the headwaters to our reservoirs start up there. And so, but when you get closer down into the city and the growth areas in the county, many of those areas are going to be downstream of the reservoir. So that is at least part of, I think, the thinking. But you're absolutely right in that if we just continue to do very poorly thought out development in the growth areas, we're really not going to make up any ground here, regardless of what goes on in the rural areas.
All right, guys, I want to thank you for coming in today. Gail Jaffe, Morgan Butler.
Rick, thanks for having us.
Southern Environmental Law Center. I think we found a couple other topics we can spend an hour on sometime throughout the year. Next week, I've got a husband and wife team as we talk about integrative medicine. He's a doctor, she's a nutritionist, and ways to make yourself better without just taking pills. www.sevillepodcast.com if you didn't catch the whole show or you just want to hear my voice again. Adios.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook and